Hi everyone, and welcome to the RegTech Report, your update on all things RegTech. My name is Carl Viertel, and with me is Stefan Zelistiel, and our mission is to bring you the latest news, speak with industry pioneers, and muse about the latest tech. We are in our brand new podcast recording studio / little room in our Align headquarter office here in Munich. I'm Carl Viertel. For those of you who don't know me, I'm one of the four co-founders of the RegTech Align. And I've also been working in RegTech for what we now call RegTech, which was essentially risk, compliance, and governance work for a long time. And so I'm really excited to start out this RegTech podcast. But more importantly, with me today is the lovely Bailey Benton, Align's head of marketing.
Thanks for having me, Carl. Yeah, it's really fun to be part of our first official RegTech podcast, and I'm very excited to implement it and see where it goes and just really become part of the conversation.
So Bailey's been with us only for a couple weeks, and when she started, we really wanted to think out of the box. How can we approach being thought leaders in the RegTech market? And so, Bailey, what was your motivation in starting a podcast?
Well, firstly, I mean, podcasts are massive, massive ways of really just partaking in being a thought leader on a specific topic. Also, I think one of the insights is a lot of people today don't actually have much time to read lengthy posts. They're more interested in listening to something while they can work or drive or you know, ride the train or bus. And so it's a great way to meet people, you know, while they're doing their daily activity and influence.
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, I've got my standard podcasts on rotation, and I luckily can bike into work. And so I always have my headphones on and exactly. Got my podcasts once a week.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. And I think with, you know, The one feedback I know we always get, and what we're all aware of, is that the expertise of the founders are a great reason to start a podcast. It's difficult to just start a podcast when you're not sure about something, or you know you don't have the backing. But that's why I really believe a podcast is a great channel for us, because having that expertise and that knowledge is a really big reason for people to believe in what we're saying. Because also RegTech is not a simple topic. It's complex, and you know, I've come to understand that in the past 8 weeks that I've been here. It's a relatively new topic. People don't always know stuff about it. But having that expertise and that knowledge and that wealth of knowledge that we can all just somehow get a hang on.
I agree 100%. I mean, the problem with RegTech is a lot of, you know, a lot of startup formats are very much, you know, pitch whatever you know in 4 minutes. And
exactly.
While the solution might be simple, the problems that we solve or address in RegTech certainly aren't. And so something where we have a little bit more time to talk about the problems behind it and how we're solving it, I think is a really, really powerful medium to talk about RegTech.
Yeah, it's exciting. And I think, you know, the more people learn about RegTech and the more they understand it, the more they'll actually benefit from it, and you know, especially see how Align can help their business in terms of their RegTech solution. It's a fascinating industry. I'm glad I dived into it. It's quite a lot to get your head around, but it's something I'm really passionate about now.
No, I mean, when you sort of first floated the idea, I think it really resonated with me, because our vision for how we speak to the market has always been a bit of a give first mentality,
yes.
Right? We always said we need to contribute, we need to be experts, and present that expert knowledge to the market first, and then we can talk about, you know, our solution, about commercials and all the rest of it. And so we hope that others that are shaping the RegTech market will join in this medium, in our podcast,
yes.
And essentially allow us to contribute to the community.
Yeah. Good. I think the consumer and customer focus of what we can, how we can add value, is always the first place to start. And I think that's exactly what this podcast is going to do.
And of course, hopefully it'll also be a forum for some other experts that, you know, want to join in, want to call in, want to join us here in our office in Munich and just have a chat about some individual topics. So that's a real, I guess, a passion aspect of the podcast for me. I guess another thing that I really want to achieve with the podcast is cutting through a bit of the hype. So one thing that I'm seeing when you sort of look at you know, what's going on Twitter, on LinkedIn, and all these or RegTech events under RegTech, there is a lot of hype. I will say sometimes by people that don't really know the problem, they just see a hype cycle and something that they want to be a part of, which is great. But sometimes we also just need to bring things back to reality and talk about what it actually is that we're achieving. And the same goes, I think, for a lot of the customers that we engage in, right? So a lot of times we, there are executive members or people in the digital departments that say, oh, RegTech is the next big thing. You know, I want a piece of that. But there might not always be a real understanding of what is happening in the RegTech market, what solutions are out there, what are the constraints of what's currently possible, and where is there a huge amount of value that we can contribute. And I guess sort of the last thing is, Bailey, you've been with us for a couple of weeks. There is a considerable amount of banter going on in the office. And sometimes it's also even on topic.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's actually something that I personally want to transport into the community is just essentially let everyone out there share in the banter that goes on in the office, some of the thinking, because at least for us, a lot of times really smart and cool ideas happen from playful banter but with serious intent. So hopefully we can replicate that in the podcast.
And we've got some very exciting guest speakers and some very interesting contacts that we've got planned for upcoming episodes, and I think they'll all just contribute to that in their own way.
Look, I can't wait for to execute on the plan that we have for the podcast over the next couple of weeks. It's really cool, and actually one sort of symptom that you could, if we had a video cam here, you could see that we actually, it's a Friday afternoon, and we were actually already drinking a beer here in the office, and we said, no, we really want to start with the very first segment here in the podcast, and so we actually have a bottle of Munich beer here in the studio with us. I'm really looking forward to what's to come, and I can't wait for the for your feedback and your contribution out there to what we're doing here in the podcast. All right, today, first of all, we're going to talk about what is RegTech, given that we are the RegTech Report. Now, with me in the studio is Stefan, one of my co-founders. Stefan, my view is sort of everyone has their own definition of RegTech based on sort of where they're coming from, what their background is, right? So if their background is in AML, then RegTech for them is AML and everything surrounding that. And obviously, our background is slightly different. We come more from the risk, from the holistic compliance view. Have you found any really good RegTech definition for yourself?
Well, first of all, I would have to totally agree with you, because what I also found in all kinds of conversations is that people have completely their own view on it, given that risk and compliance is such a huge field. But maybe to have a bit of a generic view on it or general view on it is it's applying some kind of technology or smart technology to solve and digitize the risk and compliance processes. Because what we still see in a lot of companies, even though they might deal with digital products and services, risk and compliance is very manual, sending around Excel spreadsheets or even just on paper.
Agreed. So even though Excel is obviously a piece of software, I would still not consider that tech.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, if you even if you send something by email, that's not really a digital process, is it?
Look, I mean, I think just from the terminology, obviously, RegTech sort of derives itself from at least from the term fintech. One thing that I think really differentiates fintech from RegTech is we actually found about a year and a half ago when we were at one of the first RegTech meetups in London, where we sort of all looked around and there was just a lot of gray hair. Right? And I think it's actually kind of indicative for RegTech, because if you think of fintech, there are a lot of people that are sort of industry outsiders. They experiment. It's sort of more ironic facial hair than gray hair, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And if you do look at a lot of sort of the RegTech founders or the people that are building RegTech solutions, they are people that have been in the industry for a very long time, that have felt the pain, that really know what's going on, and found, you know, are just sort of fed up with the manual way of doing things and said, stop, I think there's new technology to automate this or make it better. And I think that also pretty much sums up sort of our background. Obviously, yourself, for the listeners that don't know, you were the chief security officer for a media company. So, you know, you saw all of these things happening manually and decided, well, there might be a smarter way of doing that.
Yeah, I had to live the pain daily.
Now, there's an argument to be had that RegTech is nothing new, that obviously in some way, shape, or form, people were performing these tasks previously, and now we're digitizing them. So is RegTech just a rebranding of something that's already been there?
I mean, you have software for risk and compliance since many, many decades, right? And then there's been different terms for it. So pretty much everybody in the industry probably knows GRC, governance, risk, compliance. That's something that was invented in the early aughts after Enron scandal and big companies like IBM bringing out software. And when people ask me what really is new, why is there now a big push for this now? What changed? What I tell them typically is, you had this problem and some kind of approach to deal with this before as well, but it was a huge investment to build software around this. And something that changed really in the last years is you can build very complex enterprise application with much less investment, people, cloud services that are very fast to implement. And that's, I think, led all these industry veterans who worked in the field for decades in a bank or in other companies trying to solve it, now saying, okay, I'm fed up with corporate life. I'm going to try something new, and now I actually have an opportunity to do that.
Right? Now, I'd fundamentally agree with you. I think that a big part of RegTech is actually the software as a service, the cloud, the web technology aspect of it. So I'm not saying there isn't RegTech that you can install on-prem, but it's certainly not what's really driving the industry. Now, Stefan, Align, or you as a managing director of Align and are one of the founding members of the IRTA, the International RegTech Association. Did you guys develop a definition of RegTech for yourselves, or is there sort of like an exclusion? Like, you know, at what point can't you be a member if you're not in some sort of RegTech area?
I would say there's many, many different opinions on this. So the same as we just discussed, there's like different viewpoints based on the background of people. And there are different working groups trying to come up, I guess, with definitions, standards around this. I don't think there's an exclusion. Yeah, and we see a lot of incumbent industry players even taking over the term for marketing.
Yeah.
One thing, though, I think that changed is, if I look back also at our old, like from 2015, when I wrote the first article in November 2015 about RegTech, shortly after we first heard the term, there was a big hype starting around that topic where people thought it's like some kind of magic solution, silver bullet solution that solves all your problems by just some magic technology. And that hype, I think, has is there in a kind of technology disruption. There was a bit of a disappointment. It seems to be more complicated than actually.
Yeah, I can't just push one button and then I'm compliant.
Yeah, and I mean, we kind of said that also back then, that I just looked at the article and I said, these things will not happen in the next 5 years. Now it's almost 4 years later. And what we've seen is some of that hot air has gone away. Yeah? And people who maybe sometimes have been also a bit vocal and loud about it, they are very quiet now. But we see really less hype, but actually productive use of some of that stuff in some applications. Yeah? So it's really moving in more into a productive area.
No, I agree. I think we might actually be post sort of peak hype on RegTech and into sort of the actual area of it being productive. I'd also say there's still some house cleaning in the market to expect. I think, some of the seed funding might be running out for some business models where we might not see a perfect product market fit or product market and time fit. Obviously, we hate to see people in the market go, but I think it's a natural a natural part of the cycle that there's a bit of a hype and now we're sort of moving towards actual sustainable businesses. And that actually brings me to my next question. So you actually find an enormous amount of numbers quantifying the RegTech market, and obviously you can slice this in a number of different ways. Have you found any number or any approach that makes sense?
I mean, I've seen a lot of numbers, anything up to like 100 billion, whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, it depends on what... It comes back to the definition question. What do you include? Because we know for sure that a lot of money is already being spent on risk and compliance process. I mean, the statistics that we know since basically the global financial crisis and banks, you have 10 to 15% of the headcount now dealing with that topic. So it is a big priority. And one approach would be just to say, okay, how much can I basically raise the efficiency by using technology? And that could be a market size. Others have a more narrow definition and they basically look at bigger players and how much they currently sell and try to extrapolate with a certain growth rate.
I mean, obviously, I have a bit of a biased opinion being a provider of a RegTech service myself. So most of the time, these questions come up in context of investors, and they always want to know, well, what's the market share? And then I can, apply some formula in my magic spreadsheet in the background and calculate the valuation down the line. I think my answer is usually enough. So I think you can look at the market from different perspectives. You can say, well, what is the market for current software in this area, taking GRC, AML, KYC software into account? Then you take sort of the services that are brought and look at sort of the amount of services that can be augmented by tech or replaced by tech going forward. And then there's sort of the X factor of what's happening in the market now where there's simply no investment but there's need, or the product, or there haven't been products that actually solved a problem that existed in the market. So I guess if you add up sort of those three numbers, then that would probably be the closest you could get. But again, I don't think there's a really reliable number out there for the RegTech market size. But I would still question, does it even matter?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to agree. The enough part, that's certainly true. I mean, there's a lot being spent really in the billions with a B size, and it's definitely growing somewhere between 10 and 20%, depending on who you ask, every year. So that market, just even with most of the reports that look at financial services industry only, that's large enough. Yeah? But if you think about that, RegTech is not just financial services. Solving risk and compliance problems you see in every kind of industry, and I mean our customer base is proof of that because we have customers in every industry. And what I would say is there's even more potential because a lot of the other industries have even lower maturity and definitely a big push to increase also their efficiency in these topics.
I mean, I think one of the common misconceptions about the market is also that the RegTech market is going to be a winner-takes-all market. And if you look at sort of traditional developments in sort of RegTech or GRC, I guess GRC markets previously, there have always been multiple players that provided solutions to the market that competed. There might be some that are more successful, some that are less so, but it's still not a winner-takes-all market. And I think that also needs to be a big part of the thinking of potential buyers of RegTech solutions, that it's not, you know, a question of I need to find the one RegTech that will solve all my problems, but actually looking at it more as a variety of different smart technologies that you can plug together to create a really powerful capability to help you deal with risk, compliance, regulatory challenges in your organization. And so hopefully there are also a lot of investors that are looking to invest in the market that aren't looking at it from a perspective of I need to back the one RegTech that will survive or succeed or dominate, but that it is, I think, a market where there are a number of smart solutions that will grow to a really significant size and be successful players for, a sustainable future.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of our market hypothesis, isn't it? Also, that it's much easier to plug together these newer next-gen solutions. But interestingly enough, I mean, we haven't really seen it so far because mostly now we're integrating with some legacy systems. Maybe it's still too early in the cycle. Definitely I'd be interested to see the first cases where we integrate with some other RegTech or just among in the market in general, yeah, how well that actually works? Or is it the same pain points we always had with integrating different IT systems and services?
Agreed. Well, it's certainly a very exciting market to be in. I'm as excited as you can be about regulation compliance technology. It's certainly a topic that we'll want to cover multiple times in this podcast as the market develops. And I really look forward to the opportunity to discussing this also with a lot of other smart people in the industry. All right, so it is early February as we're recording this, and so it's the start of a new year, so it's a good time as any to think about, well, what's going to happen in RegTech in 2019? Now, my view is there's a lot of things happening around financial crime, sanctions, enhanced KYC, all those things. I think there's going to be a lot of money spent on that. There's a lot of cool solutions out there that deal with it. For me, the biggest question mark in RegTech for 2019, for two reasons, is Brexit, right? So obviously there's the question of what do businesses do dealing or doing business in the UK, or what do UK businesses do when obviously the entire regulatory environment may change. But also, undeniably, RegTech is very, very strong in London. So we'll have a lot of RegTech companies that might have some challenges down the road when a hard Brexit or a no-deal Brexit happens. What are your thoughts, Stefan, on sort of how RegTech is going to shape in sort of the face of Brexit?
I mean, it's a good question for ourselves, isn't it? I mean, we have a subsidiary in London, the Align UK Limited, and I mean, I have a lot of question marks. What happens? How we deal basically with that situation? I don't really see a shift away from London because there's just such an ecosystem on that.
Agreed.
And the people are there. Everybody's like everybody who has any recognition or awareness in the market. I mean, it did go a bit international. You see that like worldwide, and that's why I guess the IRTA was also founded to bring this a bit together. But still, if you're not present in London, you're not really being recognized worldwide, and that's I think something that will continue to be.
So I guess my hypothesis is, let's say there's a deal somewhere down the line where the UK says we still want to be able to do business with the EU because obviously we're an island but not really an island, and everyone agrees that we basically need to continue on in the same more or less regulatory or legal framework that we've had until now. So essentially no big impact on what RegTech can provide. Option two, of course, is the UK goes down some radical path of changing some aspects of regulation or risk requirements drastically. Great for most RegTechs because then there'll be more technology or more solutions that the RegTech industry will have to provide. So obviously there's some uncertainty around actually doing business and being able to, you know, simple things like inter-firm agreements between the UK subsidiary and others and, I don't know, tariffs or export controls or any random stuff that might come down the line. But quite frankly, maybe it's not a big risk for the RegTech industry.
Maybe it's even an opportunity because there will be more complexity and that you need to somehow manage. And one thing that I'm fairly certain will happen, not directly, but over time, and that's big. That's the promise of the whole Brexit camp: get rid of EU regulation that they feel like is an obstacle. And in financial services, a lot of stuff was done after the financial crisis to control that kind of risk. And a lot of people arguing, including myself, maybe it's been overdone, yeah? And they're kind of not really measuring the effectiveness of all the bureaucracy they put on. And that's, I think, something they will attempt to do to kind of make this more open, more something where, again, to give them a competitive advantage on the world market. But that might also increase the overall risk situation, which, again, maybe is interesting for RegTech because, again, you need to somehow manage
it. You know, I don't entirely buy into that because probably the most populist anti-regulation environment at the moment would be, at least if you listen to his speeches and his tweets and whatever, would be the Trump administration. And yet the or the requirements for control environments and risk management for U.S. banks, I don't think has drastically changed. Obviously, not having money to pay financial regulators, that obviously drastically reduces the chance of you being caught. For now, I think until next week, we're funded again. But even so, like the person who claimed he wanted to roll back all the regulation, quite frankly, hasn't. So why should we expect that in a Brexit scenario they actually will?
I mean, didn't they get rid of Dodd-Frank in the U.S.?
Or is that, it's watered down. Yeah. It's watered down. But that still doesn't change requirements, for example, around cybersecurity or maintaining, you know, appropriate controls and manage operational risk. I mean, ideally, organizations wouldn't be doing this purely because it's a regulatory requirement, but also just to, you know, manage essentially their risk exposure. One other thing that or one other prediction for 2019. So obviously the new privacy law, the CCPA in California, is being heavily discussed. People say either end of 2019, early 2020, it'll come into effect. And just due to the size of the economy and the interwoven nature of Californian tech businesses, it will essentially be a national regulation, so to speak. And if you go to sort of the advocacy sites for the CCPA, you see sort of that they argue for it because it gives people ownership, control, and security over their data. So obviously, we've seen that before. That sounds a lot like the core principles of GDPR. So I guess my question for 2019, are we reaching a tipping point where these privacy regulations are becoming so unavoidable that it'll just be a fact of how global businesses need to operate?
I mean, in many ways, maybe that's also been the case before. It's part of the big European myths, I would say, that there is or was no privacy regulation in the U.S. That's not true. It was on the state level quite a bit. And one thing that, though, I would see definitely happening now this year. I mean, there was this big GDPR hype, even in the U.S. Everybody started preparing for it and, like, even, like, really hysterical reactions.
Yes.
And then it kind of died down because people thought, okay, no, I don't really know what to do, or maybe I spend money on
the privacy SWAT teams didn't emerge.
Yeah. And but on the other hand, if you look back at why was it actually introduced? Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, it was just a tuning of pre-existing regulation. But the goal of the actors behind was to quickly establish some kind of global standard and, like, kind of put the line in the sand. And then I think that is happening. And one interesting development, and where I would agree, okay, this will also go from the hype into a more real discussion, is now we do see the first enforcement actions. There was recently the news with a 50 million euro fine for Google from the French regulator, which is now still in like in the court process, so it most certainly will be appealed. So that probably will take a bit longer to decide. But there is some stuff happening on that area.
But is a 50 million euro fine, which is obviously it's a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things for Google, it's a rounding error. Also, I don't know if sort of other businesses see themselves, if this is sort of like the example that will lead all other businesses to capitulate to GDPR.
Yeah. I mean, it's also interesting putting that in context there, because a big fear mongering last year was, of course, oh, it can be up to 4% of global annual turnover. And that's far from it for Google, yeah, even at that size. I just even read a funny article that now Google is paying a lot of fines across the world, especially also to the EU Commission, like antitrust charges and so on, somewhere in the area of 5 billion US dollars in the last annual report. And that apparently is $900 million more than they pay in taxes. So putting that into context, that's like these 50 million is like a small blip on that entire horizon.
It's going to be interesting to see how it also even continues here in Europe, right? I mean, for example, Austria went down a really strange path and enacting GDPR into local law, but however, sort of leaving the whole fines bit out, which obviously makes it kind of useless. I'd say in Germany, people haven't gotten too excited about it. I mean, there's this very strange legal construct. I'm sure our German listeners will know about this, that lawyers can basically fine individuals or companies for breaching a law, and there were sort of fears that there would be, you know, massive floods of basically dodgy lawyers fining private people or businesses for violating GDPR. I mean that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean I think some people tried directly on May 25th, but I don't think it led to anywhere. Or maybe it's still going on. I don't even know, but I don't think that wave is coming.
So I think 2019 will certainly show or give us some clarity on, I guess, privacy from a global perspective. And quite frankly, it's also down to citizens, right? I mean, how much are citizens willing to put up with the pretty abysmal way corporations are, you know, dealing with our data? And what do we expect of the services that we consume? Next question. Is 2019 the year of the crackdown on critical infrastructure? There have been obviously a number of laws around the world dealing with it. They kind of never really got off the ground in a big way. Is again 2019 the tipping point for that?
I wouldn't call it a crackdown, but it's certainly a new focus. I mean, there's buzz around this worldwide. And I think that's been growing over the last couple of years because we've seen regulation. In Germany, there was IT security law even in 2016. There's the NIS directive on EU level. There's the whole NIST and Department of Energy thing in the US. So the realization that is important because our critical infrastructure, so really our energy, telco, financial services, healthcare, they are vulnerable to cyber attacks and really in a major physical way that you'd feel this as a citizen. That's been there a long time, but I think what shifted a lot is this was discussed a lot in like expert circles, and now it's really in the public eye.
Yeah.
Not that the really major stuff has happened, but like, somehow people just really recognize this.
So, I mean, I think an indicator for me is, especially here in Germany, the financial regulator BaFin added critical infrastructure protection measures to the regulation for banks and insurances over a certain size. So everything that's sort of system critical or considered critical infrastructure is now covered by it. I mean, if you look at sort of what they put in, it's essentially, it's not really anything in addition for a lot of the banks. So, I mean, the security or control requirements that they had as financial services essentially exceeded their requirements that they have under critical infrastructure. But, I mean, the fact that the financial regulator is now also acknowledging, I guess, the nature of critical infrastructure, I think has the power to actually put it over the edge, I guess, for some real action in 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, our job as risk professionals is sometimes to be the pessimistic person, yeah, and look at the worst case. I mean, just imagine in financial services, that often sounds very abstract to a lot of people. But think about, okay, you're not able to do a wire transfer or go to the ATM and get some cash out, and that doesn't work for 2 weeks. What would happen? Yeah? And this could really create major problems for everyone. And that's basically also the principle that the legal frameworks put in place, that they look at stuff where basic services or the outage of a basic service, so the main protection goal here is availability, would affect 500,000 people or more.
Yeah,
that can happen very quickly with a lot of them nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, or of course, as in insurance providers, as soon as healthcare is involved, right, not being able to finance some potentially life-saving or life-extending measures because the insurance can't make payments or whatever. I mean, yeah, it is a critical infrastructure issue, and it's good that the regulators are looking at it that way. Absolutely. what's your last prediction for 2019, Stefan?
So one thing I've also seen lately, discussing also in various countries, there's been a renewed interest, or actually now some opinions from financial regulators around cloud services. And looking back in the last years, there was this myth almost when you talk to some of these security or privacy or risk people in the companies, the regulator says it's forbidden to use cloud services, which really never was true. Yeah? But there was also no guidance around it. They basically said, it's outsourcing. You have to do what you do for other outsourcing. Mm-hmm. And then people were kind of left in the air. But what's
make
now
a decision on the appropriateness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But what's now happening, they're bringing out guidelines, circulations, and basically regulation, what that means.
Well, I'd say at least the German the German document, I'm going to call it very generously, I wouldn't call it regulation, because it is really just a kind of bullet points of things to think of if you are considering cloud, right? I mean, they're still not going as far as to saying, yes, if you want to use cloud, then 1, 2, 3, and 4 are the controls you need to decide on. But I mean, it's still orders of magnitude more than anything they've done before.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a huge opportunity. I mean, look at, of course, it's not a regulation that was passed by a Bundestag or something like that. Yeah? But look at the video ident for KYC. That was also not a regulation. That was also a circulatory letter from BaFin saying, yes, that's allowed. And that created an entire industry. And I think something similar, I mean, it's not a new industry, cloud services for banks, but this will create a much better playing field where people just know what to do.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, most of the time, at least when I speak with potential customers, they're not averse to cloud. They just want sort of the right arguments if their auditor or their regulator asks them, why are you using a cloud service? This is what you can say. So I think the simple fact that they are acknowledging that, yes, people are having the discussions around cloud is a huge step forward. I think this is true for a lot of European markets. And quite frankly, even still in the U.S., right? I mean, I'd say cloud is certainly a lot more accepted in the U.S., but certainly not a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, even look at some other regions, Middle East, some countries in Asia that in last years started introducing rules the customer data has to reside in country, which is becoming more and more unrealistic these days. And I think by having putting like these standards out, like what is happening in Europe with BaFin, and EBA brought out this letter as well, that's being basically repeated by other European regulators. So that will, I think, worldwide again shift the discussion there quite significantly.
So I mean, obviously, as we spoke about in the first segment, RegTech is very much driven by cloud technology. So I think simply the fact that regulators are acknowledging cloud technology is here to stay has a huge impact on the RegTech market. And I can't wait to see what 2019 has in store for us. Thanks for listening. Let's continue the conversation on Twitter. Follow our dedicated podcast handle at the RegTech Rep. Make sure to rate this podcast and send your thoughts and comments to TheRegTechReport@align.com. Once again, that's TheRegTechReport@aline.com. You can also follow Align on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter, or catch up on our podcasts on align.com/TheRegTechReport.